Well, greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries over the internet and radio. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage. That's at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on uniformitarianism when we come back. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, you know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention back in 1787 followed that scriptural principle of law when they put into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." But in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. And in place of these just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system, and they gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. Now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation, Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in our Mosaic Law School that we conduct twice a year here at the Law School in Isabella, Missouri. If you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package first? That's the place to start. It doesn't cost you anything. And if it isn't for you, let it light. It's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational. It's informative. It's entertaining. And best of all, it doesn't cost you anything. It's free. And you can call right now and order one. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study, and if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on to the archives page, and you can download that free General Law CD package right off the computer. All right, uniformitarianism. Last week, we were talking about a subject very similar to this. And I thought, well, I guess we ought to take a look at uniformitarianism, or evolution, as they call it. Evolution, they call it over in Great Britain. And that's because it permeates our society, and it's a distraction. When we take a look at ancient man, and we look at archaeology, politics, and we look at the reality of what we can actually see, hear, taste, touch, and smell, it runs contrary to what we've been taught, what we learn, and what our glossy, four-colored textbooks tell us in our colleges and in our high schools. So is there an answer to this? And I would contend that yes, there is. There are liars, there are damn liars, and then there's statisticians. That's what Mark Twain said one time. Now, many times people are in error and they repeat the error. That's innocent and that's understandable. But when people repeat an error that they know to be an error, then that's a lie. And many of these people have a motive involved, and it deals with money, prestige, jobs, politics, and those are what we call damn liars. So I'd like to expose some of the damn liars for you, and let's start off here with a process or a program that's called the Big Bang. Now, you've heard of the Big Bang. That's where there's a period at the end of this sentence, and that period contained all of the mass and matter in the entire universe, everything that you see, our sun, our moon, our planet, and all the planets in our solar system, and all the stars, and all the planets, and all the comets, and everything that you see in our Milky Way galaxy. And then all of that, combined with all of the galaxies of the universe, and the quasars, and the black holes, and all of that, as far as you can see out for 12.5 billion light years, and then with the improvements on Hubble, all that you can see from 12 to 25 billion light years out, and then, like as not, everything else that's out past that that we can't see and don't even know if it exists. And all of that was condensed into something as small as the period at the end of the sentence. Now, I've never seen anything in the Bible to compare with a fairy tale like that. You know, that sounds like once upon a time, far, far away, there was a period at the end of a sentence, and it contained all of the mass and matter in the universe. I don't know. I'm just repeating here what it says here on the page. I'm not pulling your leg. I couldn't dream this up. I haven't got a mind that thinks in those kinds of insane terms. Now, these people are called science and scientists, and when they speak, we all listen. If somebody questions them, they're looked upon as being illiterate savages, dragging their knuckles on the ground. there's something wrong with somebody that would question that precept or that principle of uniformitarianism. Let me repeat it to you again. Once upon a time, far, far away, in a land long ago, there was a period at the end of the sentence, and it contained all of the mass and matter in the universe. Now, is that a fairy tale? Now, according to evolutionary philosophy, all life ultimately originated from a super explosion, and currently, many people believe that this mega blast happened some 12 to 15 billion years ago. Pause. Wait a minute. They said, many believe that this mega blast happened 12 to 15 billion years ago. May I interject? Why didn't it occur 24 to 30 billion years ago, or 48 to 60 billion years ago? Or why didn't it occur 8,000 years ago, or 3,000 years ago? Or, you know, many people believe, well, I'm one of many people, and I don't believe 12 to 15 billion years. I'm going to show you some evidence as we progress along. Here's my point. This 12 to 15 billion years is just speculation. It might as well be 15 to 18 billion years, or 27 to 36 billion years, or 35 to 42 million years, or 300,000 to 600,000 years ago. There isn't anybody that knows. And I've never seen a comment made anywhere or anybody ever said, it occurred 12,387,447,618 years, 3 months, 14 days, 7 hours, and 6 minutes ago. The truth of the matter is, there isn't anybody that knows. Now, we've been given some information in the scripture that tells us roughly when it happened, about 6,000 years ago. I worked out the chronology, and I showed you this last week. It's 6,034 years, according to Pannon's chronology. It's pretty close to Usher's chronology. 6,034 years. That's what we can actually document from an ancient document that you could walk into court under the rules of evidence and present and have it accepted. But this idea that it occurred 12 to 15 billion years ago is just speculation. It's nothing more. It's nothing less. There's nothing wrong with the speculation. I mean, if that's what you want to believe, get after it. But it gets better than that. As time progresses along, these guys actually come down with numbers and dogmatic statements like, that's the way it is. And if you don't believe it, then you're uneducated. Going on, an infinitely tiny mass of matter somehow chanced to blow up, and things have been spinning off that explosion ever since. Can you tell me who was there at the time of the explosion? Can you tell me what experiments, what laboratory that was this demonstrated in? There's no evidence of it. It's many people believe, and they believe it was a chance explosion. From then on, with random processes, everything in the universe became increasingly complex. The sun and all the other stars eventually condensed out of gas. The planets, including our Earth, also condensed out of dust particles swirling through space. Notice these dogmatic statements. Earth also condensed out of dust particles swirling through space. Excuse me? How do you know that the Earth didn't form from the blast of the explosion and form out of little pebbles that had been formed out of the dust and gas? Or that it didn't break off of some bigger piece or mass? I mean, come on. You know, my mind is about as fertile as anybody else's, and I could think of all kinds of conjecture here. I would prefer to say, I don't know. I wasn't there. I wasn't alive at that time. I see what I observed today, and we're asking questions like, well, where did it come from? Some guy comes along and says, well, long, long ago, and far, far away, once upon a time, there was a period at the end of the sentence. All right, guys. Now, you tell me that I'm dragging my knuckles on the back of the ground. A fairy tale is a fairy tale, and that'll all of us love once upon a time and far, far away, but that isn't where reality is located, is it? Now, let's ask an important question here. Do explosions ever increase order? Let's do a test. If you take a stick of dynamite and you go out and you blow up a pile of lumber or some other building material, is it going to end up more orderly? Or let's try it this way. Let's take a pile of lumber that's scattered. Or instead of the pile of lumber being stacked up, you know, in nice neat rows, like a unit of lumber is, let's take all the boards in there and let's just scatter them like a box of matches that you just tip upside down on the desk. And there it is. It's a pile of matches. And they're just headed and directed in every which way. Right. Now, let's take this pile of lumber and let's put some dynamite under it and let's torch it off. Do you believe that if you were to explode dynamite under a pile of boards that they would fall down in an orderly stack like a unit of lumber is, keeping in mind that all of those units of lumber are carefully piled up by an intelligent human being working on a green chain, taking one board at a time and sliding it and piling it and very carefully putting it all together so that all the boards are headed in the same direction and like as not they're all the same length, and that's what we call a unit of lumber. Now that's called design. Some intelligent being intends to stack the boards up and he does just that. Do you believe that if you stuck a stick of dynamite under the pile of boards after it's been carefully stacked up and they're all the same length and they're all in the same direction, that it's going to make it more orderly? Do you believe that? Well, there are people that do believe that, and there are people that believe that the earth is flat. There's people that have all kinds of beliefs. But do these beliefs make it true? Is it true because these people believe it? If 50 million Germans believe something, does it make it true? We didn't think so when Hitler started World War II. We didn't believe that that was true just because 50 million Germans believed it, did we? Now, others argue, given a steady addition of energy, it's possible for order to come about. After all, the Earth is an open system to the sun's immense input of energy. Well, let's hold it a second. Another question that we ought to ask here is, does energy alone produce order? You know, let's turn the light bulb on here in the room. There's energy. Does that produce any order here in the room? Does it stack pages and piles of paper up and make them orderly? And if that's the case, can you cite any examples? Can you show me a scientific study that I can do and I can experiment in my own laboratory and duplicate that? Can you do that? And that's what science is all about. Science is knowledge. Science means we can do this over and over and over again. And this is the way this works. That's what science is. Now, other than that, theories and hypotheses are speculation. That's called philosophy. That's like religion. You know, religion is philosophy. Here's what we believe. That's fine. I'm going to quarrel with that. But is this philosophy, is this religious ideology that you're possessing here, or espousing, is it true because you're espousing it or because you believe it? No, not all of us believe the same religious philosophy of the Pope. He's entitled to his opinion. I'm not arguing with that. But does that make it true because he believes it? Now, let's try another one. How many lightning bolts does it take to bring a corpse to life? Do you remember Frankenstein? You know, miracles like Frankenstein only occur in the movies. They don't occur in real life. That's a fairy tale. When Mount St. Helens blew up in the northwestern United States, we saw a good demonstration of the results of an explosion. It was a tremendously powerful blast. It was equal to many times the force of a nuclear bomb explosion. And for miles around the mountain, everything was desolated. In fact, it was called a dead zone around the mountain. Now, scientific articles repeatedly refer to the Big Bang as a reasonable explanation for the origin of the universe. But there are physical realities that we observe out there in the heavens which defy the possibility of such an explosion being responsible for all of the order that we see. For instance, if the Big Bang were true, the planets should all rotate in the same direction on their axis. But Venus and Uranus both rotate backwards. Did you know that? Venus and Uranus both rotate backwards. Now, if we had an explosion under a pile of boards, they would all head off in the same direction. Well, explain this. If you had an explosion, do you think that it would drive half the boards down into the ground and half the boards up into the air? You know, there's got to be some reason, logic, and common sense here, doesn't there? Number two, all of the nearly 50 moons in the solar system. Did you know that in our solar system there are 50 moons? All right, out of these 50 moons in our solar system, they should orbit their respective planets in the same direction, but 11 of them orbit in the opposite direction. Huh? What's that all about? You set off the dynamite and it blew half the boards down into the ground and half the boards up into the air? It blew all the boards to the left and none of the boards to the right? Come on. Number three, the orbits of the moons of the several planets would be expected to lie flat over the equatorial planes. However, a number of those moons, including our moon here on planet Earth, follow a highly tilted orbit. And number four, the sun's inner planets should be made up mostly of hydrogen and helium, just like our sun. Much less than 1% of the Earth is made up of these elements. Now, there are a number of other mysteries to be found out there in the real universe that simply do not add up to a Big Bang for its origin. I mean, that's just where reality is at. Now, people have been exploding things for years and years. Now, for instance, when you want to tear a building down, you wire it with explosives. And they have a special technique for doing this. And these guys that do these building demolition companies, are real artists. And when this building falls down, it doesn't tip over to one side or the other. I mean, that thing just falls right straight down into the basement. Have you ever seen a demolition company come out to a building site, place all of their explosives under the building materials, and set it off to build the building? I mean, you know, there's got to be a point in time where insanity ceases, isn't there? I mean, come on, let's wake up and smell the coffee here. Now, it's true, we can tear the building down with explosives, and we can do that pretty orderly. There is. We can actually see and witness and observe that, and I'm not arguing with that. But when you go to build the building, when you go to build it, can you use explosives? It would sure as hell make things fast, wouldn't it? Now, in the June 1983 issue of National Geographic, on page 741, one astronomer is quoted concerning the remarkably puzzling precision of the universe. There's precision. You know how we set our clocks and watches? It's by measuring the movement of the planets. That's where time comes from. It's the movement of the planets. It's the Earth rotating on its axis. It's the Earth spinning around the sun. That's the way we set our clocks. And it's pretty damn accurate. Well, this one guy, he's an astronomer now, he said, to get a universe that has expanded as long as ours has, without collapsing or having its matter coast away, would have required extraordinary fine-tuning. A Chicago physicist calculated the odds of achieving that kind of precise expansion. He said it would be the same as throwing an imaginary microscopic dart across the universe to the most distant quasar and hitting a bullseye 1 millimeter in diameter. Now, how did somebody come up with that conclusion? Well, you do it like this. You say, I'm going to write on the back of a truck with a handful of buttons. I got 12 buttons in my hand. While the truck is driving down the street at 30 miles an hour, I'm going to throw the buttons off the back of the truck. And I want to know how many times will I have to do that before those buttons actually arrange themselves in four lines of three each, spaced 1 inch apart. So let's get after it and let's start testing that and see how long that's going to take. You know, there are some things in life that are just impossible because that isn't the way it works. How long will it take to get your Chevy Nova to fly like a 747? Come on, it ain't never going to fly. It's never going to fly because it ain't designed to fly. That's where reality's at. Now let's think for a second. You know, knowing the odds, why don't more astronomers confess that presently popular theories are totally inadequate to explain these kinds of astronomical precision? Now, is there evidence to disprove the Big Bang theory? Did the universe begin with a super explosion of a small mass 10 to 15 billion years ago? According to demonstrated laws of physics, certain things should be expected from a proposed cosmic explosion. Other things would be absolutely impossible in such a framework. Now, the following problems are observed in our solar system and defy the Big Bang explanation. First, the suns and planets do not condense from cold clouds of gas and dust. The sun has a very small angular momentum compared to the planets. The system's major angular momentum is in the planets, and there are eccentric and even tilted planetary orbits. Uranus and Venus rotate in the opposite direction to the rest. Some of the planet's satellites are also in retrograde motion. There is even distribution of angular momentum among the satellites. Our moon has a lower density than the Earth, and the heaviest elements are predominantly in the smaller planets. Now, why is that? See, if you had an explosion out here, there are certain results that we would expect from it. Scientists, I mean the guys, you know, that go to college and get degrees and they're real smart fellas. They're the guys that come up with this, and then they say, hey, listen, this is what we would expect. This is what we do in the laboratory. This is what we do when we actually go out in the field and we test it. Here's what actually happens when you put the dynamite into the pile of boards. Here's what actually happens when you throw the buttons off the back of a truck. They don't line themselves up into four neat rows, three apart, one each, and separated by 1 inch. The boards in a pile do not fall back down into a nice, neat, orderly pile of boards. And a disorderly pile of boards, when they're blown up, do not fall back into an orderly pile of boards. I mean, there's some things that do happen and some things that don't. Now, if you'd like to believe that a pile of boards, once you set some dynamite off under them, will, in fact, fall back into orderly pile, that's fine. I'm not here to argue with you. If you want to believe that, go ahead. But there's reality out here. If you'd like to get hold of reality, let's take a look at comets. Number two. By the way, while we're at this, we might as well take a look at the Big Bang Theory, comets, thermodynamics, design, random chance, radiometric dating, juvenile water, erosion, topsoil, Niagara Falls, coral reefs, stalactite growth. I mean, I can go on and on. Henry Morris, who's also a scientist, he's a hydrologist, put 70 of these together. And he said, let's take a look at these arguments that uniformitarianism has advanced over the last couple hundred years. And let's just go out and actually test them and see what happens. And when we go out in the field and we actually test them and we observe the results, a uniformitarian doesn't work, never has worked, and is never going to work. So why would we want to believe in it? And why are they teaching that to us? That's the crazy part. Why are you teaching these fairy tales to otherwise intelligent people going to college, trying to learn something intelligent? When we take a look at comets, as comets make their circuits around the sun, they suffer a fate quite different from the planets in our solar system. Every time they make their swing around the sun, they are literally blown apart by the powerful solar wind. And on every pass by the sun, more of the comet's matter is blasted from its surface to become part of its tail. Knowing this, then, it is quite apparent that the comets will eventually disintegrate completely. Okay, now let's get this picture. There's a comet that comes around every so often. Last time I was there, I think it was 1987, called Halley's Comet. So when Halley's Comet comes by, it swings around the sun, just like our planets do, but then it leaves our solar system, it goes out into space someplace, and we don't know exactly where it goes, but then it comes back, and we're able to identify this comet. And we're able to chart it, and we can figure out when it's coming back again. And every time that it makes that circuit, it's about every 80 or 90 years, something like that, every time it makes that circuit, it disintegrates a little bit. It's running down. It's not getting bigger, better, brighter, and faster. It's getting slower. It's disintegrating, and it's falling apart. Now, that's the exact opposite of evolution. See, evolution says that Halley's Comet should be getting bigger and brighter and more compact, and it's evolving. But it isn't. It's not evolving. It was at a state at some time in the past where it was bigger, faster, shinier, had a shorter tail. And it is disintegrating right in front of our eyes. The day will come when Halley's Comet will be no more. It's running down like a clock. Well, how long would that take? Well, if we measured the observable rate of comet disintegration, scientists realized that all of the short-period comets would be gone in as little as 10,000 years. And yet there are up to 5 million comets still orbiting in our solar system. You see, it's just a mathematical problem. You take a look at the comet, and you observe its disintegration. Then you just chart that forward, and it says, if that thing keeps circling around here for 10,000 more years. Well, now, wait a minute. Halley's Comet, if uniformitarianism is true, has been circling around out there since the Big Bang, 12 to 18 billion years ago. Come on. When the thing exploded, a long, long time ago, Halley's Comet was a part of the mass and matter that was in the little dot at the end of the period, long, long ago and once upon a time, wasn't it? Well, it could only last for 10,000 years. So that means that long, long ago, the thing would have burned up. It's either that or Halley's Comet was created just a few thousand years ago. And what we're observing today is that it's disintegrating in 10,000 years from now, it won't exist. Now, that's the exact opposite of evolution. It's the exact opposite of uniformitarianism. It is what we observe in the real world. It's called entropy. And entropy, second law of thermodynamics, everything's running down. It's coming to an end. It's collapsing. Our sun is burning up. It's going to go out in about 100,000 years. Now, because many astronomers are not willing to admit the possibility that this process might indicate that the comets, as well as the solar system itself, was created about 6,000 years ago, they are forced to dodge the issue by devising another theory. So they suppose that there must be a huge nest of comets far, far away in the outer reaches of the solar system. And every once in a while, there's some cosmic disturbance that supposedly kicks some of these out of the nest. Now, has anybody ever seen that nest? Is there any evidence that such a birth of comets happens periodically? Now, the answer to that is no. But such explanations must be invoked if you wish to avoid the glaringly obvious conclusion that the planets and the comets just haven't been there over 10,000 years. Comets, 10,000 years, and they disintegrate. Now, I'm not reading this or telling you this because that's something I dreamed up. Hell, I'm not smart enough to figure this out. I don't even claim to be. But there are other guys out there, that have other ideas, and the Bible has a different report. And my complaint is that we're not getting equal time. See, in politics, if a guy stands up and he says the sky is up, then you got to allow the Democrat to come in and say, no, the sky is down. It's called equal time. You don't get equal time in National Geographic or Reader's Digest. All you get is uniformitarianism, period. End of the report. But there's another side to the story. That's why last week I said, let's take a look at ancient man from what we've dug up, from the very people that give us this uniformitarianism. These are the very people that have dug up all of these artifacts and then hidden them away in the museums. I mean, they take them into the museums and they categorize them, and then if it doesn't fit with the theory of uniformitarianism, well, then they hide it. They stick it away or they destroy it, I guess. I don't know what the hell they're doing, but they don't put them out on display. Now, at times in the past, they've had them on display. That's why we know they exist. And then when they disappear, we ask, well, what did you do with it? Oh, well, and then we don't want to talk about that. Why not? Why shouldn't we talk about it? Why shouldn't we talk about comets? Why shouldn't we talk about the Big Bang Theory? I'm not opposed to that. Let's talk about it and let's start thinking for a change. Start using our brains. Is this what we observe in the real world? Is that what we're actually seeing? Or is this just what people are telling us? Long, long ago, far, far away, once upon a time. I've got to give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective, not state schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there on the Internet. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and editorial review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine, they're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, and if you don't have a computer, you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about comets here. You know, ideas about the origin of the universe are always speculation, since no man was there to observe and report about it. So we must be honest to admit that statements about supposed processes of the past are unconfirmed. And as for present processes, what do they suggest about the dim past of the vastness of space? Well, no astronomer has ever seen a star born, much less evolve into a more complex structure. All that astronomers have seen is the violent destruction of some stars. Degeneration and disintegration is certainly not evolution. It's the exact opposite. In astronomy, a great deal of importance is placed on seeing things. It is extremely faulty science to announce a process which cannot be observed. And yet astronomers talk and write often about stars being born as if they were sure of it and positive that it happened through millions and millions of years of time. In the National Geographic in January 1985 on page 8, it says, new stars are still being born as they always will be. Now let's think about that for a minute. How much integrity is represented in a statement like that? That's just pure speculation. There's no science involved in that. We haven't seen any stars evolving or being born. They may believe that that's true. It's kind of like Catholics, you know, they believe in their religious ideology, but there are more people in the world that don't believe in Catholicism. I mean, if you're going to take the majority opinion over here, Catholicism sucks then. Bottom line. Now, Catholics are certainly entitled to their view, just like Protestants and Muslims and everybody else. And I'm not saying these scientists aren't entitled to their views. What I'm taking exception to is, well, who in the hell gave these people a license to present these views, exclude all other views, and then present it as if it was, in fact, fact, when in fact it isn't fact? Where do these people get off with that kind of arrogance? It's like, how would you like it when a Catholic comes up to you and says, we've got the truth and you're all a bunch of fools? Where does that kind of arrogance come from? I mean, they may believe it, but then does that make it true? Now, degeneration and disintegration is not evolution, but it is what we observe. Everybody is observing the degeneration of what's going on around us. The sun is burning up at the rate of 5 feet an hour. Well, that's what science tells us. That's what science is for. Science is there to observe it and then come back and make a report. And they've been observing that now for the last 100 years or more, and they say, wow, now we can actually tell you, the sun is burning up, it's getting smaller. It was a time, you know, we looked at it. When I was a kid, they believed that the sun has been there for millions and millions of years, billions of years. In fact, the sun was there at the Big Bang. And then it's changing, its molecules and ions or whatever it is, and they go back and forth and they oscillate. There was some kind of an oscillation theory when I was a kid going to school. And it's not getting any bigger, but it's not getting any smaller, and it just stays the same all the time. I kind of defied, you know, when you strike a match, it burns up, and when it consumes all of the stick, it goes out, and then you can't strike it anymore, and you can't burn it anymore, because now it's just ash. There's nothing left there to burn. Now, our common sense would tell us that that's the way the sun is constructed, and sure enough, after having watched that thing now for 100 years, they have now come to the conclusion it's being consumed. It's consuming itself at the rate of 5 feet an hour at 750,000 miles in diameter. In 100,000 years, it's going to burn out, just like burning up a match. Well, if it's going to burn up in 100,000 years, then 100,000 years ago, the sun had to have been twice the size that it is today. Or some proportion of that. And then going on back, you know, 15 billion years. Do you know how big the sun would have had to have been when it started out 15 to 18 billion years ago? Hell, well, I haven't got a computer that can tell you what the number is. But just keep adding 5 feet an hour, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for 15 to 18 billion years, and it'll tell you how big the sun is. Maybe your computer is bigger than mine. Mine goes into tilt when it hits 10 billion. And we don't have numbers that big here in Isabella, Missouri, but there are people out there that can do that, and if you're one of those that's smart enough to do that, just do the arithmetic yourself. Now, how old is the universe? Well, astronomer Harold Schlesinger reports about a star cluster of four stars in the Trapezium in the Orion Nebula. These four stars are moving away from a common point at a very high speed. So projecting backward in time, it appears that these stars originated at a common point about 10,000 years ago. The mystery is that there are stars in the cluster which, according to the evolutionary scheme, are millions of years old. Now, no astronomer believes that stars originated before the cluster itself. All right, so let's think about this for a second. This is called the expanding universe theory, that the universe is expanding. Oh, I don't know, maybe not. All I'm doing is repeating to you or reporting to you what these scientists and astronomers are telling us, and I'm just applying a little logic to it and getting my calculator out here. Let's see. If you observe four stars and you watch them, you know, night after night after night for a long period of time, you say, gee, they're moving away from each other. So, you know, they watch them for a while and they say, gee, these stars are moving away from each other at the rate of, and they calculate out how many miles an hour or how many light years, you know, per period that they're moving apart. And then they say, well, that's really interesting. And then they say, well, let's see. Here's the four stars. And then they kind of jot them on a graph over here, you know. And then they say, well, here they are. And here's how far they are apart from each other. Okay. And then they calculate how fast they're moving and moving apart. And then they say, now if we were to extrapolate this backwards to where there was a common point when these four stars were all together before they blew into four pieces, then how many years was that back? And they figure it's less than 10,000 years. Now, what does that tell you about this 15 to 18 billion year crap? And again, I'm just a plumber. I didn't come in here and say to you, no, I'm an astronomer, believe me, because I've got all these pieces of paper hanging on my wall. I'm just reporting to you what these clowns are reporting to me. And then I said, oh, okay, well, let's do the arithmetic on it and see how that comes out. And all of a sudden, hey, the numbers don't jibe here. So I thought I'd give you that report. Let's take a look at hot stars. Astronomers have set up a measurement scale by which stars are calibrated according to the amount of energy that they emit. Letters are designated for each star type, and various colors are detected coming from the various normal star types. Now, our sun is what they call an average star, labeled as a G-type. It is yellow with a surface temperature of about 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit. Some stars are much, much smaller and considerably cooler. Others are tremendously hotter and larger, emitting energy in the ultraviolet spectrum. The O-type stars are over 90,000 degrees with diameters 10,000 times the size of our sun, which has a diameter of 864,000 miles. Oh, darn, 864. Now, I reported to you it was 750. And look at that, it's 114,000 miles bigger than that, okay? So I stand corrected here, reading it right off the page. Now, you see, I don't know how big the sun is. I couldn't tell you. I haven't got a clue. Not until somebody measured it and reported it to me. Now, last time I saw a number, I thought it was 750,000 or thereabouts. Now, it could well be that the guy that reported it and I read it, or I forgot it, but here, it's 864,000 miles, give or take, you know, a couple miles. This type B, though not as big, are still monstrous energy burners. So they've got these stars sitting out here, and then they're looking at them, and they're looking at them, and they're measuring them. And I'm not arguing with these measurements. You know, if a guy's got some instruments here, and he says, oh, my God, we call this spectroscopic analysis. And when you look at the colors that come from a burning mass, you can tell what it's made up of. So down here on planet Earth, they took some stuff, and they burned it, and they looked at it through the spectroscope, and they said, well, that's true. That's made out of copper and zinc and iron. So then they applied that to the stars, and they said, gee, look at that. That sun up there, that star, it's made out of zinc and copper and iron. I wouldn't argue with those guys. That sounds pretty logical. That's what science is all about. They should report to us and tell us, well, here's what we observed, and you can go do this in your laundry. You can go do this in your own laboratory. Hey, you can reproduce this. This is science. This is knowledge. This isn't once upon a time. Now, these O and B stars are radiating more than 100,000 times the energy coming from our sun. Burning down at that rate and clocking backwards, the entire universe would have been filled with the mass of these stars just a few thousand years ago. Not millions, just a few thousand years ago. Hey, I didn't write that. I'm just here to report it. When you put the arithmetic to it, these billions and billions of years don't fit the model. Bottom line, don't fit. Now, some of these hot stars are in clusters together with cooler stars, indicating related origins in time. Assuming an advanced age for all of them, Henry Russell wrote in his Astronomy, Volume 1, those O and B stars should have been dead for a million years, and yet they're present with the young stars, assuming colder stars are younger. you know, again, assuming colder stars are younger. We don't know that. When we look in the scripture, God comes along and says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now, I take that. You know, some guys, I'll take that and they'll say, well, that's millions of years ago, he created all this mass and matter out here. And then about 6,000 years ago, he came down here and he actually got to fine-tuning it. I take it that he created all the mass and matter 6,000 years ago also. That's what it seems to say to me. You can construe that any way you want to. But now when we actually take a look at it, take a look at the astronomy book, and here's the astronomer comes out and he says, out here we see some stars that are real hot, and right next to them are some stars that are real cool. Now we had this Big Bang a long time ago. All right, Big Bang, remember? All right, now the cool stars and the hot stars, they assume that our cool star came from a hot star and that over time it's running down, which is what we observe. That's true. The hot star is getting cooler and the cool stars are getting colder, but they're right next to each other in very close proximity, so they must have come from the same source. Now, why is that? And these kinds of anomalies are all over the place. They're just out there everywhere. And they don't have answers for it. Now, the answer is, if we go back here to Genesis 1, there was a creator, and he's the guy that made that. I know somebody's going to write me a letter and say, well, who made the creator? I don't know. Well, I'll tell you this. This creator himself says, I'm without beginning, and I'm without end. Angels have a beginning, and they have an end. And human beings have a beginning, and they have an end. And all mass and matter had a beginning, and it has an end. This guy says, I'm without beginning, and I'm without end. Now, that puts us in a realm of physics that's totally outside of anything we know of. Now, human beings are kind of vain, and they're presumptuous. And the guy that writes me these letters, and he says, who made God? And I have to write him back and say, I don't know. But here's what he said about it. How in the hell would I know? I just got here in 1939. Hell, the world was here a long time before I got here. What do I know about who created God? I don't know any more than what the God could tell me. And so he said, well, let me tell you, Gordon. And he said, I'm without beginning, and I'm without end. Now, I'm a reporter, so I'm just reporting to you what this guy said. He said it himself. Now, that puts us in a realm of physics here that we don't understand. We don't know anything about. It's kind of like telling a five-year-old kid about quantum physics. What the hell does he know about quantum physics? Hell, the kid can't count to 10 yet, for crying out loud. Give him a break. Now, I can count to 10, but I can't count too much beyond that. So I don't have the capacity to weigh out who made God. All I can do is report to you that this guy says, I'm without beginning and I'm without end. He also tells us he made all the angels. So all these angels out here, they're not without beginning. They have a beginning. They were created. When were they created? I don't know. He didn't tell me that. I didn't get a report. As soon as I get it, I'll report it to you. All right, now there's a mystery here. Some of these hot stars are in clusters together with cooler stars indicating related origins in time, assuming an advanced age for all of them. Henry Russell wrote in his Astronomy Volume 1, those O and B stars should have been dead for a million years, and yet they're present with the younger stars. All right, that's a mystery. Now, Poynting, this is his name, P-O-Y-N-T-I-N-G, Robertson effect. All stars have a gravitational field, and they pull in particles like gas, dust, and meteors within their range. Stars radiating energy 100,000 times faster than our sun have a spiraling effect, pulling things in all the faster. The unusual thing is that O and B stars are observed to have huge dust clouds surrounding them. Now, if they were very old at all, every particle in those ranges would have been pulled in by now. Okay, here's another point here. You go out here and you look at these stars, these real hot ones, find them in clusters, and you find a lot of dust and gas around them, and they're pulling the dust and the gas in. They're pulling it in at a certain rate. So they can look at that and they can say, well, over a certain period of time here, that's all going to be pulled in to that star, and we're not going to have this dust and gas floating around out here. Well, if it had been there for 15 or 20 billion years, it would have already been pulled in, because we can see the rate it's being pulled in today, and we can calculate about how long it's going to take to pull it all in. Can you see these mysteries over here? Hey, listen, these mysteries are mysteries because they don't fit with the theory of evolution. They don't fit with the Big Bang. That's what the problem is. It doesn't fit. Doesn't make any sense. And the guys that are saying this are the astronomers. They're writing their own books and their own papers among themselves. And they're saying, you know, we see this and we don't understand that. It's a mystery. Now, if you go to Genesis chapter 1, it doesn't become a mystery anymore. There was a guy out here. We call him God. You can call him Elohim, or you can call him Eli, or Allah, or, you know, whatever. Hang a name on. First cause, you know, chance. Evolution. But all this came into existence at some point in the past, and that's what the two laws of thermodynamics tell us. There has been no past eternity of matter. All matter has come into existence at some point in the indefinite past. The guy that did it said he did it 6,000 years ago. We have a lot of egotistical maniacs running around here saying, oh, no, he lied to you. Can't believe him. Believe us. And I have to ask these guys, well, where were you standing when all this transpired? How old are you, partner? Do you see this? You got any evidence? Have you got any laboratory experiments? I mean, other than, you know, we think it could well be, it may have happened, and we believe. Do you have any evidence there? And the answer is no, no, 1,000 times no, we don't have any evidence, but we got lots of beliefs. And you say, well, what about the biblical statement in Genesis? Oh, God, that's religion, and we reject that. There's nothing religious about Genesis 1, 2, and 3. It's all science. Every word of it. No religion involved in the whole thing. Just because you saw some holy Joe with a or sky pilot out there carrying the Bible under his arm didn't mean he knew anything or ever read it. Now, I'm not taking sides here. The religious guys over here are dumber than the evolution guys, at least in my view. At least the evolution guy over here isn't totally spaced out. He's looking around asking questions. The religious guy isn't even looking around asking questions. This brings us up here to the sun is shrinking. You know, a Newswire report back in 1980 made the surprising statement the sun's diameter appears to be decreasing by about 1/10% per century. That's 5 feet per year. Or, excuse me, 5 feet an hour. Now, multiply that out, and 5 feet an hour isn't much when you consider the sun's nearly, you know, 840,000 miles in diameter. But what are the implications? Well, if the sun is shrinking 1/10% per century, then it totals 1% per millennium. And if you believe the Earth's edge, or age rather, is only 6,000 years, there's no problem with that. At that time, the sun will have shrunk 6%. But what do you do if you believe that the sun is millions of years old? Because if it existed only 100,000 years ago, it would have been double its present diameter. 20 million years ago, it would have been on the surface of the sun. It would have been burned up, 93 million miles in diameter. Hey, that's what real science is about. Real science is where you measure and you weigh things and you report what you see, what you hear, and what you know. And you leave out what you think and postulate and what you believe. Next time we'll take up the two laws of thermodynamics, which tell us that there's been no past eternity of matter and everything that we're observing is running down. It's not building up. Meanwhile, I got to remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on a compact desk, and The Law Hour website